Newell will be back on Monday. I'm Dave Cohen. Glad to be spending your Friday with you here on WWL. By the way, it's feeling awful hot out there where it's not raining now. 105 already for that heat index at the airport in Kenner. 95 is what it feels like in Slidell. So if you got to be out there, please seek shade, use sunblock, and hydrate as much as you can. Coming up next hour, we're going to take a closer look as we wind down qualifying for the New Orleans mayor's race today on how that race is shaping up. And is it headed for a runoff or not? Ron Fauché will be with us next hour to take a look at the mayor's race in New Orleans. This hour, though, we've invited Greg Rigamer to join us. He's a demographer and political consultant here in New Orleans. Happy Friday, Greg.
Happy Friday to you, Dave.
This must be a day that demographers look forward to all year. This is like Christmas for demographers, right? It's World Population Day.
Well, there's always something going on. We have so many stats around us now and such great information and such good tools. Every day's like Christmas.
Yeah, you used to have to wait 10 years for a census to just find out how many people lived in the United States. No longer
not
do
any-
we do yeah, we don't do that anymore.
Not anymore.
So the UN estimates that the global population is now 8.2 billion people on the face of the earth. Half of those live in just seven countries. And the U.S. is one of them. China, India, the U.S., Indonesia, Pakistan, Nigeria, and Brazil make up half of the world's population. And the world's total population is growing, but slower these days, as people not only here domestically, but around the globe appear to be having fewer children in this day and age. So I wanted to have you come on to talk to us about what is going on with the world population on this World Population Day, but also obviously discuss, as we approach the 20th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, what the population looks like here locally in the city of New Orleans, in the region, and in the state. So I guess let's start with the world, since it is World Population Day. What other notable trends, if any, are you seeing other than the rate of growth of population is not what it used to be?
Oh, no, it's accelerating tremendously. I mean, it took about 1,000 years for the population to reach 1 billion people. But in the last 200 years, we've added 7 billion more people. This huge change, fast growth, is because people are living longer. More babies are surviving. There have been phenomenal changes in population in recent years. Obviously, the whole world is becoming more urbanized, you know, than it was. Lifespan is getting much longer than it used to be, you know. So all of these things are contributing to it. We have a healthier, better fed economy, and more affluent than in past years.
So obviously, yeah, over the last couple of hundred years, that incredibly rapid population growth. But this seems to indicate over the last half a century or so, and particularly in the last decade or so, that the rate of growth is at least starting to stop its amazing trajectory, and that people are having fewer children, particularly of this current generation of childbearing age individuals.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it on a worldwide basis, in 1970, women had an average of 4.5 children. Now, this is worldwide, not the U.S. But by 2015, it dropped to 2.5. So that, think about that over
from
that small
4.5 to 2.5. That is dramatically less.
Yes, yes. And so, I mean, the population still is increasing about 70 million people per year, which is a very significant number. But the rate of growth, as you said, is really decreasing.
Yeah, it's projected that we'll reach nearly 10 billion people somewhere between 2050 and the year 2100. So the trajectory continues, just not as steep a trajectory as
correct.
The population of the earth continues to grow. You just wonder, is there a point where we top out? Is there a point where we can only have a finite number of people living on Earth? And I guess so far the answer is no.
No, and just think about the phenomenal advances that we've made through technology, everything from healthcare to food production to food nutrition. So the planet clearly can support more than 10 billion people.
And now, we
might not like that. but as a practical matter, growth will slow. We're seeing that now, but it won't top out.
You know, I'm not a demographer, and so today is not my Super Bowl by any means. But as a child, I remember I got an atlas. And in the back of this atlas that I got, it listed the square footage of every industrialized country on the planet. And then or the square mileage. And then it listed their population. And I remember looking at some of the ones that seemed more dramatic and looking at parts of China where there was literally more than one person per square foot. And being amazed as a child that all of the people who lived in some of these major Chinese cities, there was no way they could ever all be standing outside on the ground at the same time because they legitimately would not fit. They had to be in high rises and over different levels of the city because there were too many people for the square footage the city allowed. And I guess at that point, that's when you had those one-child limits and things like that. But even China now is trying to get people to have more children.
Absolutely.
Because the population growth there has slowed so dramatically.
Yes. You know, I read a book recently, and there was just a passage in it that I thought was very interesting. When we talk about how things have changed, you know, the average lifespan in America now is right about 80 years. And so if you think of the phenomenal changes that have occurred over three lifespans, so if you took 380 years old and you just put them back to back and you say, okay, what was like in America 240 years ago, so we go back to 1785, and we look at the phenomenal changes that we have seen as a country between 1785 and today, everything you can possibly imagine, and that's only three lifespans. And it's a pretty interesting thought when you look at it like that. And, you know, as so often what we see, that's the most fascinating thing, is that the rate of change is changing. And so all of this has a significant impact or play on our demographic trends, our social, our health, our intellectual. So, you know, I'm just one of these people that really look forward to the coming years.
You know, change, we always hear, is the only constant, but now change is constantly changing. I remember seeing a statistic back in the 1980s that the doubling rate of knowledge, the determination of how quickly we advance our understanding, our science, it was in 1900, it doubled about once every 100 years. So from 1800 to 1900, when you look at the increases in technology, and then they looked at from 1900 approaching 2000, and the rate had shrunk to every 25 years through the 1900s. And now some estimate that the doubling rate of knowledge is less than a year. That every year we have such technological advancements that everything we knew a year ago has now been updated, replaced, or amended. And you just think about the advancements in our lifetime compared to our parents' or grandparents' lifetimes.
Absolutely.
We see everything. You know, in my lifetime, we've seen the internet and then the smartphone and all of the things that come with that. Heck, my grandparents would go from horse and buggy to car, but didn't advance a whole lot beyond that. So now things are advancing far more quickly.
Well, and look what AI brings to the table. I mean, you talked about as a child looking at encyclopedias and things like that. Now you just simply ask a question.
Yeah, like if I want to right now, let's see, I'm going to ask Google, Google's AI, what is the current doubling rate of knowledge? All right. Several sources indicate that the doubling rate of knowledge has dramatically accelerated over time. Historically, until 1900, human knowledge was estimated to double every century. But by the end of World War II, the rate had shrunk to 25 years. In 1982, it was estimated to be doubling every 12 to 13 years. So, yeah, so there you go. Didn't need an encyclopedia. Yeah. Didn't even need to reference sources. We just ask AI, and in less than a second, it generated that answer.
Yeah. And so how long would that have taken you to look up in your childhood set of encyclopedias?
Way too long, if it was even in there. So
it was even in there.
And yeah, and then that information, just by the fact that it's printed on a page and the process it takes to create it, edit it, print it, bind it, distribute it, by the time you get it, you know, how much of it's even still, other than historically
relevant,
accurate, how much of it's accurate, yep, and relevant. We're talking with, we're kind of getting off in the weeds, and my apologies for that, with Greg Rigamer, demographer and political consultant, on this World Population Day. When we come back, I want to look at the population of New Orleans 20 years after Hurricane Katrina and how it has changed over the last 20 years, and really even over the last 5 years, the dramatic changes we've seen in the city of New Orleans and in the New Orleans metropolitan region. We'll let Greg Rigamer break that down for us. Also talk, we hear from politicians every election cycle about the out-migration from New Orleans, from Louisiana, and how we are constantly struggling to keep our residents here and prevent them from leaving for brighter, greener pastures, better jobs, or whatever elsewhere. So we'll take a look at how that effort is going. I've been doing this now 28 years at WWL, and every year, every election cycle, they're trying to stop the brain drain, trying to stop the out-migration. Have they had any success? We'll find out from Greg Rigamer after this. You can call us and text us on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. Taking a look at the population on this World Population Day with Greg Rigamer, demographer and political consultant. Greg, here we are nearly 20 years. Next month it'll be 20 years since Hurricane Katrina dramatically changed the population landscape of New Orleans, southeast Louisiana, and really of the state. Where are we at now compared to pre-Katrina?
Well, as a practical matter, New Orleans was losing population prior to Katrina pretty significantly. I mean, the city was about 650,000 in the 60s, and pre-Katrina, the 2000 census had us about 485,000. But by 2005, that number had dropped to 455,000, okay? And as a practical matter, Katrina had a colossal impact on the city and the state. But, you know, areas that are in a state of decline typically fall more rapidly after a catastrophe. Areas that are in a state of growth grow much more quickly after an event because of the reinvestment. So where we are today, New Orleans is somewhere around 360,000 people. You know, we have not really maintained our population even since like 2020. So it's not all related to Katrina. If we look at the metropolitan area, and from 2000 to the current, we're about 180,000 people down. The total population in the New Orleans Metairie, Louisiana metro area, is today is about 1,146,000 people. I'm sorry, in 2000 it was 1,146,000 people. In 2010, it had dropped down to 956,000 post Katrina. In 2020, we were right at a little bit above 1,007,000. And today we're at about 966,000. So if we look from 2000 to the current population, we're down about 19%, okay? And if we look at the change from 2020 to the current population, we're down about 4%. During the same period, the United States grew at about 2.5%, and Louisiana has stayed pretty much the same. You mentioned on one of your promos about every election cycle, you hear about what are people going to do to stop the drain, the brain drain. And that's a really colossal issue for Louisiana. We have just not experienced the growth that our neighboring states like Texas, like Florida, like Georgia, like Tennessee have. You know, it's a true challenge.
And the question then remains out there, what can be done? It just seems with pieces of legislation every single year in the legislature, with ordinances before the city council, with parishes passing new rules and laws, there's always a conversation about how this can help stop the brain drain, about how we have to do something to give people more reasons to stay in Louisiana. But clearly, from the numbers you're giving me, from the nearly three decades that I've been watching this, it ain't working.
It's not working. It's not working. And as a practical matter, you know, it's very challenging. Louisiana is a poor state. New Orleans is certainly a poor city. And people follow money. People follow income. And you look at what has happened in areas like Houston, Austin, Dallas, San Antonio, Atlanta, multiple SMSAs in Florida. Look at Tennessee with Nashville. Economic opportunity attracts people. People move to improve their lifestyle. And improving their lifestyle is often related to a better paying job, a better paying career opportunity. And we are a great city, a fun place to visit, but a tough place to make a living.
Talking with Greg Rigamer on this World Population Day, as he just documented very clearly how New Orleans and the greater New Orleans area, while we see population shifts clearly from South Shore to North Shore, from the city to the suburbs, we see these trends, but overall the umbrella trend is for shrinking populations and reduced number of people who are choosing to call this part of the United States, this state, this city and this region home. Greg, I know you got to run. I want to ask you just very quickly, demographically, and as we move through this election cycle, I think it's important to understand, what is the racial makeup of the city of New Orleans now versus what it was prior to this rapid population loss?
Okay. Let's just talk about voter statistics because, you know, we have some very exciting races coming up in the fall. The mayor, the sheriff, all the city council will be up. New Orleans now has about 263,000 voters. 36.5% of those voters are white. 54% are African American. And right under 10% are other races, like Asian, Native American, races self-declared for the Secretary of State. But the bottom line is that as we approach this election cycle, the city is still predominantly African-American. At one point, it was much higher, around 60% or so. But like right now, about 54%. We think that in this coming election cycle, white voters will account for about 40% of the votes cast. African-American voters about 52% of the votes cast, and other races somewhere between 7.5% to 8%.
So African-American or black, still the largest group, and still New Orleans is a majority-minority city, but
significant,
not as much as it was just a few years ago.
Correct. I mean, when we were talking about pre-Katrina and things like that, at that time we were over 60% African-American.
Yeah, didn't something like 40,000 predominantly blacks from New Orleans move to Houston and about 20,000 move to Atlanta, and many of them never came back?
Many, and just exactly what we were talking about, particularly with the African-American middle class. They had better jobs, better schools, better housing, and so did not come back.
Greg Rigamer, happy World Population Day to you and your fellow demographers. I'm glad you were able to join us. I know you got to run. Enjoy your weekend and go enjoy the rest of World Population Day. He's Greg Rigamer. I'm Dave Cohen. I'm in for Newell Norman. We got some time now for your calls at 504-260-1870. I'll open up the lines. It's a Friday. Anything you want to talk about here on the Newell Norman Show. If you want to talk about the population shifts and why all of the efforts, all of the officials, all of the lawmakers, all of the politicians, all of the leaders appointed and elected have made to stop the brain drain have failed for over a generation now. And maybe you can tell us how to solve that and how to reverse it. But so far, no one has found the key to doing that. Is it out there? Is there any way to stop this? Or are we just going to continue to dwindle and see the population continue on this rapid decline here in New Orleans and in Southeast Louisiana? Also, we talked last half hour about birthright citizenship. Be happy to get back on that conversation at 504-260-1870. Jump on a line right now, and if there's anything else you want to talk about on this Friday, now's your opportunity. 504-260-1870 or text us on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Back with your calls next. And coming up in the news, we'll have details of a police chase early this morning in Kenner that left a fleeing suspect dead. Apparently, was going so fast, he flew almost all the way over the canal on West Metairie, didn't quite make it, and had a front-end collision with the bank of the canal and is now dead. So details on that coming up in the news. Also check in on qualifying on this last day of the opportunity for candidates to sign up to be mayor, sheriff, city council members, and other positions in the city of New Orleans. Also next hour, we'll talk to Ron Fauché, our political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics, about how specifically the mayor's race is shaping up and if he thinks it's headed to a runoff. Mike in Metairie, thanks for calling. You're on WWL. What's up, Mike?
Hey, man, how you doing? I wanted to ask Greg, but I guess he's already gone. Wanted to mention about St. Tammany being pulled out of the metro area.
Yeah, it's gotten so big now that it becomes its own. It's become its own metropolitan area. Now, I think that's more of a census delegation than one that most people who live in the region will consider. But it really is remarkable when you look at what's happened in St. Tammany Parish. The population in St. Tammany Parish in 50 years has quadrupled. In 1970, there were less than 64,000 people there. And as of the last census estimates, there are now nearly 276,000. And the rate of growth has not slowed for St. Tammany.
So, I mean, that's what's hurting, like, the number, though. He didn't really mention. I understand.
What do you mean?
That's where we're gaining. That's where we're gaining. So if you keep that in the metro area number, at least you're getting some, in, you know, people coming in.
Well, he was doing the nine parish metro. So, but the population of Greater New Orleans, as we define it, is continuing to shrink, regardless of the growth of St. Tammany and Tangipahoa.
Right. I'm just wondering, you know, like Atlanta, they have like so many counties, you know, because the county. I don't see them pulling any counties out of Atlanta total, but maybe they are. I don't know.
Well, it's just a numbers
got
thing.
Pulled out of hours.
Yeah, huh? but it doesn't change the fact. I understand you're playing a technical game now with the whether or not St. Tammany should be its own metropolitan area. But regardless, even with St. Tammany in, the region is losing population.
Yeah, I know. You're right.
So do you think there's any solution to this? Do you think there's any way that this turns around? I mean, for 30 years now, they've been talking about stopping the brain drain, turning it around, getting people to come back, getting people not to leave. No. It's not working. Do you see a solution?
Yeah, I mean, it's sad that he didn't really, you know, he's the man that's working on this, that he wouldn't say, yeah, well, this is what we really need to do. But, you know.
Well, he did.
I mean, you need to
He said we need good paying jobs. Period.
Huh?
You need good paying jobs.
And yeah, you need exactly.
Economic growth.
I'm 100% with you. You get jobs, you're going to get people come in, you know.
Yep, and not having those is getting people to leave. Now, some people are moving around within the region, no doubt about it, and St. Tammany is the perfect example of that. Mike, we appreciate the call, but even with St. Tammany's unbelievable growth, that's just moving the deck chairs around, as it were. Yes, people may be moving across the lake 24 miles, and I'm a perfect example of that. After 25 years living in Metairie, I now live in rural Tangipahoa Parish. Now, the reasons for that are probably very different than for other people. I did it because all of my kids moved north of the lake to find better paying jobs and more bang for their buck when it came to real estate. And so my wife and I realized, and my wife's a country girl at heart, and I had promised her one day I'd get her back to the country. So we realized it was time after 25 years in Metairie. Plus, the cost of housing got so stupid. I made a ridiculous killing selling my house in Metairie, sold it for far more than I ever thought anyone would ever pay for it, and could not miss out on that opportunity a few years back. Kenny, thanks for calling. You're on WWL. How you doing, Kenny? Happy Friday.
Great, great. Doing wonderful. Love the demographer's take on the situation. I think one of the solutions would be taking the state income tax to zero. What do you think?
Well, I think you can't deny the fact that you look at areas where we've seen the dramatic growth in states near us, and Texas has no state income tax, and Florida has no state income tax. And there,
Mississippi just instituted no income tax as well.
Yeah, I don't think Mississippi faces plenty of its own challenges. But
that's the competition. Huh? That's a
yeah, not as much as Texas and Florida. But so to answer your question simply, it's worked elsewhere.
Yeah.
Would it work here? To me, it's surprising on one level that people move to a state that has no state income tax, because the federal income tax is the same, and the property taxes in those states are much higher than we pay.
Yeah. My son lives in Dallas. My other son lives in Charlotte. And I lived in Charleston for 7 years. And an interesting story in Charleston. In the 70s, Charleston was no better than New Orleans. A friend who was there had the interesting take that you basically had some economic things that made a big difference, but then what you got was an influx of population that wasn't native.
So the whole character and culture and flavor of the region changes when that happens.
Sure, and in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, they call them halfbacks. They went to Florida, and it was too expensive, so they moved halfway back.
Yeah, you know, and that's a cultural conversation. That's a very different one. So I'll comment on that.
Oh, yeah.
But to answer your first question, for whatever reason, people obviously like living somewhere where there's no state income tax. Now, when you look at it over a period of 12 months, how much are you really saving not having a state income tax? Especially if you own property and you're paying a higher property tax. So, yes. I think clearly that works in other states. Would it work here? Worth a try. Nothing else has worked. But to your other point, you know, I lived in Texas and I lived in Missouri and I've lived in other places. I grew up in Chicago. I often tell people that the difference between a Yankee and a damn Yankee comes down and stays. A Yankee goes back where they came from. Well, I've been living in New Orleans 28 years now, so greater New Orleans, 28 years now. So I'm a damn Yankee. But so I'm one of those people who came in, but I adapted to the culture, I think. I didn't try to make the culture adapt to me. My point is, if you've been to Dallas, it doesn't have a whole lot of flavor and character that's unique to Dallas. If you've been to some of these other big metropolitan cities that have had great population growth, it's like you could put a blindfold on you, drop you there, and ask you, where are you? And you might not even know, because they're all so homogenized and similar. I love the unique culture we have here in Southeast Louisiana. And would we sacrifice that to have economic growth and keep people from leaving? I don't know, but I do know that that's something that people have always wanted, is to bring people here. So other than getting rid of a state income tax, do you have any other solutions to stopping the brain drain and the out-migration? All right. We've lost Kenny. Kenny, we appreciate the call. 504-260-1870. We're going to take a break, give you an opportunity to jump on the line and share your thoughts with us. We'll also check the Oakland Art Jewelers talk and text line at 504-260-1870 to see what you're sharing with us. Had some very angry people last hour about our conversation with the legal scholar and LSU law professor, Ray Diamond, about how he thought it was very unlikely that President Trump's executive order banning birthright citizenship would survive a constitutional test, and ultimately the U.S. Supreme Court is going to strike it down as unconstitutional, and it will be the law of the land unless and until we have a constitutional amendment that anybody born in the United States is a U.S. citizen, regardless of the immigration status of their parents. So we can continue that conversation as well after this. I want to talk to you. 504-260-1870. We're back after this. Texts are coming in on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line at 504-260-1870 as we talk on this World Population Day about why the population of Greater New Orleans and Southeast Louisiana is continuing to just plummet, down 180,000 over the last 25 years for the Greater New Orleans area, even more dramatically down for the city of New Orleans. It was 455,000 before Katrina, now down to about 360,000. So the question that I threw out there is, what do we have to do to stop this population decline, to stop the so-called brain drain? Politicians and leaders have been trying to do it for decades now, and obviously they're not having success because the population continues to decline. One person texts, says, get a mayor that cares and wants to do right by the city. No kickbacks, fix the streets, keep the city clean, and keep crime down and have economic development. Somebody else texts in response to our conversation just now about some of these cities that do see this dramatic growth and are enjoying economic development and population booms being, well, less culturally interesting. At least that's my take on it. They text in and said, I too love our flavor and culture, but we also don't have anything nice here. Texas has nice things that people with money like. Nice streets, nice clubs, nice golf, nice pools, nice roads, and nice neighborhoods. I get it. You have to be able to tolerate the grunginess. You have to be able to tolerate the slow progress, if any progress, towards dealing with things like rampant crime, which we have seen growth in and progress in recent years, like poor education, like widespread poverty. These are very, very difficult problems to solve, and we've seen that generation after generation. And so, yeah, if you do want to live here, and I want to live here, I've been living here 28 years now, and I love it, and I'm not planning on going anywhere anytime soon. I've turned down jobs in Houston. I've turned down jobs in other major cities because there is something about this place that just makes you not want to leave. For a lot of people, but clearly for a lot of other people, they do want to leave. Dave, thanks for calling. You are on WWL.
Hello?
Yeah, Dave.
Hello? Yeah. Alexa, stop. I'd like to talk about the Epstein files. Alexa, stop! You know, I remember well.
All right. I'm going to let you go deal with that Alexa thing, whatever you got going on there, Dave, and we'll see if we got time to come back to you. All right. Coleman, who else we got on the line? All right, Jimmy, thanks for calling. You're on WWL. Please don't yell at your Alexa.
Yeah, that was funny. No, I just, like, you look locally with Plaquemines Parish, for example. They got the toll bridge and the ever-impending diversion project. And, you know, they're putting a new plant down there. They put another one down there. There's another one coming. It's like, is it a civilian zone or is it a industrial zone? And they're putting a plant down in the Houma area now. So it's like, is it civilian accessible, you know, with insurance rates, with storms, of course, or is it more of a like a long-term industrial zone plan? That's the big debate. But
obviously these are all efforts to generate, you heard Greg Rigamer say it, and we see it all over the country, what leads to population growth is economic development and good-paying jobs. And those are things we've struggled with here.
Let me Well, let me respond to that in regards to Pikeman's Parish. Most of the jobs, if you notice, for the plant, it's temporary workers who work within the company for LNG that are just jumping from Texas to Cameron Parish to now Plaquemines. And then once their hitch is done, they basically pick up their trailer. If they're from Texas, for example, you can't blame them. They go to the next plant that's being built or shut down work. So I wouldn't say it's really directly affecting locally.
Well, there are some permanent jobs, obviously, that would stay. And they will grows the job database. They may not be the jobs you view as desirable, and they may be negative consequences of this economic development as you see it. But at least someone's trying something, right?
More people are leaving than staying, and the people who are pulling their trailer to work aren't planning to stay here long term. So it's not a long term civilian zone. It's more of a long term industrial zone along the coastline. Anyway, look, I wanted to talk about all the local meteorologists talking about cloud seeding this week, and it seems like every meteorologist has posted on social media this week about cloud seeding and how it's been around for a while.
Cloud seeding?
And everybody's in debate.
Spell that for me.
Cloud seeding, correct.
Spell that
cloud,
for me.
Cloud, as in up in the sky, C-L-O-U-D.
Oh, cloud. Cloud
yes,
seeding.
Cloud seeding, like a seed, like a watermelon seed.
Okay.
And they're talking about that and trying to, like, basically explain how it's used in technology, how it was used in Vietnam with Operation Popeye, and people are debating what was that involved with all the flooding. I wanted to get your take on that. What's your take on this cloud seeding phenomenon, and could it be used for nefarious purposes?
Well, first of all, this is the first I'm hearing about recent talk about cloud seeding. I know that it's been a scientific idea for a long time now about whether or not we can modify the weather to increase rain in areas that are stricken with drought and to otherwise impact things. But it sounds this, like so many other things that we have in today's day and age of social media and extreme viewpoints and conspiracy theories, is dangerous to even talk about. To talk about the ability to take tiny particles and put them in clouds to generate more rainfall, to alleviate drought and those kinds of things. Because then it gets you all into the contrail conversation and all of that craziness. And you just wonder if you have to put on your tinfoil hat or not to even begin this conversation. And no matter what you say, someone's going to absolutely 100% think that you're wrong no matter what it is. So, you know what? On a Friday at 2 minutes before noon, I think I'm going to avoid having the cloud seeding conversation. But thanks for your call at 504-260-1870. I'm Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman. Coming up next hour, we're going to get Ron Fauché in here, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. As we are now we have barely 5 hours left of qualifying for the New Orleans mayor's race. We're not hearing rumblings of, I guess it wouldn't be a surprise if we were hearing about it, but we're not hearing about any well-known, well-financed campaigns that are going to be thrown together here at the last minute and any candidates that may jump into the race here in the closing hours of qualifying. They could substantively change the complexity of this upcoming mayoral race. So we'll talk to Ron Fauché about that and continue the conversation with you on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line at 504-260-1870 after the news here on your Friday.